You're listening to Faith and Family. I'm Andy Bates. It is a good day. A good day to do good things. We're going to talk about some pastors that are doing some good work, not just in preaching the good news of Jesus as they do so faithfully on a regular basis, but how they can help. What are they doing to help future students who are preparing for the ministry to serve as pastors or as teachers and other vocations in the church? What are these guys doing? Well, they are putting in a lot of time and training to do something that, not a lot of us would do. And, we're going to see what they're trying. We'll find out in just a little bit. So hope you can stick around for the conversation. In the second half of the program today, we'll revisit a conversation with Den Trumbull, Dr. Den Trumbull, former president of the American College of Pediatricians, on safety for women and children, especially when it comes to relationships with men. So I hope you can stick around and listen to the whole program today. Thanks to our underwriter, Concordia University Wisconsin, for supporting this program. You can find out more about Concordia University Wisconsin on our website, KFUO.org. Look for the CUW logo in the sponsor section there, and that'll take you right to their page. You can find out more about all the great work they're doing. Joining me by phone this morning, Pastor Mark Mylotz, senior pastor at Shepherd of the Lakes Lutheran Church in Brighton, Michigan. Pastor Mylotz, welcome to Faith and Family.
Thanks for having me.
Glad to have you with us today. Can't wait to share your story with our listeners. And also joining us by phone today, Pastor Drew Grunhagen, pastor at St. Michael Lutheran Church in Wayne, Michigan. Pastor Grunhagen, welcome to Faith and Family.
Thanks. Good morning.
Good morning. How are things in Michigan this morning, Pastor Mylotz?
We are, in my neck of the woods, experiencing our second snow day in a row. And so got a little cabin fever around these parts.
I bet. And Drew, how far are you from Brighton? How far is Wayne? I'm not familiar with the Michigan geography as well as I should be. How far are you guys apart?
We're about 45 minutes apart. We're a little closer to Detroit.
So you guys get to see each other once in a while?
Yes, quite a bit.
Oh, good. Well, today we're talking about a story that was recently shared in the Michigan In Touch newsletter, the periodical from the Michigan District of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, and you guys are taking on a new endeavor, something that I've thought about before, and I thought about it for all of 20 seconds, and then gave up. You guys are teaming up with some other pastors to run, swim, and bike in the Ironman triathlon in Louisville this October. And I can't remember where the idea began. Did it start with you, Mark?
Actually, it started with Drew and I on a camping trip last summer with our families, sitting around the campfire, ironically being quite lazy and just thinking out loud about bucket list items or having grand ideas about things we might want to accomplish in our life. And next thing you know, we talked ourselves into going for it.
Now, triathlon, where did that idea come from? Drew, you've been a runner for a little while now, correct?
Yes. And I've done, in March too, we've done marathons together. And last couple of years, I've just done a couple of tri events, just shorter distances, sprint distance. Mm-hmm. But to kind of clarify that night of camping, it was really Mark. I had no intentions of doing the Ironman, and Mark posed the question, and my first reaction was, "Yeah, that would never happen." And but then I went for a jog later that day. And it was a thought that stuck in my mind. Says, "No, this might be a fun adventure."
So this was part bucket list, but there's also another idea behind this too, and that is to help out students who are preparing for vocations in the church as well. Tell me a little bit more about that, Mark.
Yeah, you know, we were at a conference for our district pastors, and we have a couple of other guys that are going to do this, as you mentioned. One's my associate pastor and one is a good friend here in the area. And we were all at the conference, and our district is unveiling a capital campaign to raise $10 million. And a portion of that campaign is going to focus on raising up church workers and making it more economically possible for quality students to go to one of our Concordias, for instance, and study to be church workers. And that really clicked with us. It's something that's near and dear to my heart for sure, because I was profoundly impacted by my time at Concordia. Obviously, it led me to now being a pastor, but I know that I'm not paying lip service to it when I say I would not have made it through without generous financial support from other people. And that's always stuck with me, and I've tried to be faithful in giving back through the years, and this is just another opportunity to do so, perhaps at an even greater level by using some friends to do that as well.
Drew, from your perspective, why is it important to support those future church work students and help them prepare for a vocation, whether it be a pastor, a teacher, a DCE deaconess, or whatever their vocation might be in the church?
Well, historically in our church body, in the Lutheran Church, Missouri Synod, that was one of its main objectives as a synod, is that not only do missions and establish churches, but we would need those church workers, those pastors and teachers, youth leaders, DCEs, musicians to fill those missions, those churches, so that we can proclaim the gospel. And if we want to do missions, we need the workers, the faithful men and women to do those missions and reaching out. And so I thought it was a great idea just to tap into that campaign and help those students and those young men and women who want to go in church work and provide the means to get the education, the training, and be out there to preach and teach the gospel.
Well, it's a noble task indeed. Let's go back to how you're approaching this to support these future church workers with training for and running this the Ironman in October. So it started with an idea sitting around a campfire, and this is a bucket list idea. Now, how much, Drew, you'd mentioned you've done some sprint triathlons before. Mark, have you done any triathlons, any sprints, or are you? Which is your favorite out of all three? Running, swimming, yeah. Cycling?
So my background athletically in the recent past has been really on running, mm-hmm. and I've completed a couple of marathons and have been pretty consistent in running. So that is my greatest comfort level. Finding that during this training, I'm enjoying the bike more than anything else. And then swimming is, I think, for a few of us, the most unnatural or most difficult aspect thus far. And so I had enough experience with some marathons to know what goes into an endurance event. But we chose to do the Ironman, one, for a bucket list, but two, it's a great platform. People take notice in ways that they haven't taken notice to things before. Mm-hmm. You can already see that happening. So we're going to have a larger base of people to tap into to ask for their support. And so doing something big on our end is a way of just getting people to pay attention. And what I really hope will come out of that is that we'll have some people give. And we've already had some people give on our website that I don't even know who they are, but they heard about this through a publication such as the Michigan In Touch, and they've donated at various levels. And so the triathlon captures people. I think everybody's watched the one that's in Hawaii on mm-hmm. NBC, and there's a certain bit of romanticism to it or bigness to it that gets people excited.
Now, what about the other pastors that are joining you, Pastor Vogel and Pastor Gartner? Do they have any backgrounds in running triathlons as well?
No. So actually, Pastor Gartner does. He's done a couple of half Ironmans, so mm-hmm. he's the most experienced in doing so. And then Pastor Vogel, my associate pastor, he's the youngest and most athletic of us. Even though he's the most inexperienced, we anticipate that he may be finishing quite a bit ahead of us.
Yeah. Well, how are you feeling about it right now, Drew? How are you feeling about this goal of being ready to run this Ironman in October?
So far, so good. Actually, so I started gearing up for this. So back in last fall, October, September, to get more serious in biking more and trying to swim, get in the pool and stuff. So I'm pretty confident, but things are pretty still fresh, and I haven't really put in the bulk of hours that's going to be coming up. And so probably this summer might be a different response. So you can call me back then. So, but no, things are going really good. And it's just really the big thing about this that I'm starting to learn is how you use your time.
Mm-hmm.
And it's amazing, you know, I'm just going to have to put more time into the training, but it's amazing how you can change your schedule and be flexible. And you realize how much you do waste your time, at least for myself, on needless things, you know. And he says, you know, I don't need to be watching 2 hours of TV tonight. I can go to bed early and get up early and get things going.
That's a great question. I was mentioning to someone else before the program today, and they're curious how you, as pastors, have the time to do the training for this that it takes to complete or prepare for a triathlon. Mark, how's that going? How's the training going and balancing the time between church, family, and training?
Yeah, I've had a few obstacles. I have four children, young children, but also my wife started full-time work in January. So we've kind of just had all kinds of things that are challenging as far as time. But I have actually found that this is making me a better pastor. And certainly it's improved my attitude, and it has improved my energy level. It has been a real positive. I think that I've realized I have to work out in the mornings, which is an adjustment that you get used to the more you do it.
Mm-hmm.
But getting it out of the way in the morning does allow for you to not miss things later in the day when mm-hmm. things come up. And that was happening a little bit. And so you just realize you got to do it in the morning. But it really creates a lot of energy and a boost for the day. And people are supportive because in our church, our people are really wonderful, and they want two healthy pastors, and they think it's cool that we're doing it together and that we're spending time together on some of the training. And so it's really just been a total net positive for us.
What does your training regimen look like right now, Mark?
Yeah, so right now we're probably about 6 to 8 hours a week, and so I get to the gym just a little bit after 6 most mornings during the week, mm-hmm. and the weekdays right now the workouts are about an hour, and then now on Saturdays they're ramping up a little bit to, for instance, this past Saturday it was an hour and a half on the bike. Next week, or a week from this coming Sunday, is the start of my official program. I'm going to follow a 30-week program, and this program is just totally spelled out for us over the course of 30 weeks. That's March 13th that that's going to start, and it takes you in the first 10 weeks, for instance, from about 6 to 10 hours during the week, and then eventually it ramps up towards the end of training to about 20 hours a week. The nice thing about the timing of this Ironman is that bulk of the training is going to come in August. So it's a little slower time to be able to take some extra time for training. It's a little slower around church that time of the year.
How about you, Drew? What does your training regimen look like?
I'm a little actually ahead of the game. And Mark and I are using this. I think we're using the same training guide. And but I, like, since I started last fall to really get really serious, I'm actually almost 2 months ahead. But right now I'm putting just shy about 10 hours. I get up about 5:30 every morning to either hit the gym to swim or get to church early and just try to get a few hours early in the church and then leave earlier in the afternoon. But I run about 3 times a week. At least an hour, and then on the weekend, an hour and a half to 2 hours, and then biking, and then 3 times a week with the biking, and again with a longer bike, about two and a half hours on the bike on the weekends, and then try getting to swim. The swimming is that's the thorn in my flesh. we've been gracious enough to get a church member to work with us, who's a swim coach. But I thought I was doing really good until I met with him, and now I feel like I'm way behind. So, but it's come along. I think the important thing is just get in the water and mm-hmm. do it. And kind of like what Mark said, you know, and with the scheduling, and especially with, you know, there's a lot of times you're alone on the bike or you're running, and this is one thing I always liked about exercising, but especially for me, and this might sound cheesy, but it really becomes a devotional time, a prayer time of just kind of talking, thinking of Jesus, and working on sermons in my head, and it just kind of as they go through the jogging or biking, and just think about other things, and it's a nice time to kind of that quiet time, if you will, when you're out running.
So you're not carrying your whole theological library with you to the gym when you're on a bike day, are you?
Well, maybe I should. Maybe we could work out my arms, but no.
Sitting there with your commentaries and your Greek New Testament there on the bike. That would be, it's a good idea, though. I have to carry him up and down stairs. That would be a good workout.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, so swimming sounds like everyone's least favorite so far in preparation for this. I am a swimmer and a runner, but I am not a bicyclist by far. And I jokingly say that because I'm too afraid to ride my bike on the roads. I love having teeth in place, and I'm afraid that I'll just end up, you know, face first on something when bicycling. But I do enjoy running and swimming, but I'm not a distance runner by any means. What is the total distance that that you'll travel in this Ironman, Drew?
The total distance for the whole Ironman?
Mm-hmm.
It's 140.6 miles.
Wow! And so, how does that break down for each action?
2.6 mile swim,
2.4.
I'm sorry, 2.4 mile swim, 112 mile bike, and then the marathon, that 26.2 miles
of running. Wow. When you first read that, Mark, what did you think when you thought 140.6?
Yeah, you know, it's so daunting when you look at it, and I know that there's a lot of people who hear it and their first inclination is to say that's crazy, they'd never do it, or, and certainly not everybody has to want to even try, but or they look at us or me and think there's no way that's possible. You have to take it in little chunks, and like, for instance, building up this base has been a very intentional time before starting this 30-week program. And you really find that week by week, if you follow a program, it becomes doable. It's for instance, you know, Drew was mentioning how he's ahead. The first week of the advanced training program in the book that we're following, and this is a book that's really an industry leader, so it's very reputable, we could all accomplish that week now. And that just gives you a little bit of confidence, and that is very helpful, because if you just think about it all at once, or if you go out your first workout and try to do a two-hour run, you're going to get injured. So we have been trying to take it slow and steady, mm-hmm. build a base, be smart about it, realize we're not 20 anymore, and that we need to follow the experts, and it becomes doable. But there's no doubt that it's certainly the largest personal feat, I guess, that I will have ever tried.
I'm curious what your wives think about this. We'll start with Mark and then go to Drew.
She was skeptical at first, and just that I would do it or follow through on it. And she has really commented a number of times to me how excited she is to see us all sticking to a program and being dedicated to this. And so she's been really supportive, and she's excited about going and watching the race and kind of soaking up that whole atmosphere. And she is completely supportive in carving out the time, or allowing me to carve out the time. And actually, if I'm not feeling super motivated, she will remind me to get moving because it's not something that you can kind of fool your way into. You need to do the work. So it's been great. Yeah.
How about you, Drew?
My wife Heather, she's been a real good asset. The thing is, with kind of that juggling with time, you know, it's also time with family and with my kids. And Mark is in kind of the same boat. You know, kids are involved with a lot of things. My wife also works full time as a teacher. And I know I dump a lot of stuff on her. Like, you know, someone needs to be run to this music lesson or this sports practice, but I can't do it because I got this time I need to get out and run. And she's been very good at kind of help cover things and be there to cheer me on. The nice thing with my wife, she's also a runner, and in fact, she's training for a big 15-mile race in May. So it's great to go with her, and we run together, and so I kind of have a little training partner to go out with and stuff. So although she won't swim and she won't bike, but at least she will run with me.
What does your congregation think there in Wayne, Michigan?
They're pretty excited. I needed to start moving forward to kind of unveil this for the fundraising and stuff. I've been kind of waiting to get closer to the spring. But a lot of my staff and close members are aware of what's going on, and they're pretty excited for me. And they keep asking me how the train's going and how things are progressing, but they're behind it. And the neat thing about my church, they're very supportive of Lutheran education and also church ministry. And they think it's a neat thing to do a fundraiser to get support the church and especially our future church workers.
Mark, how about your congregation, Shepherd of the Lakes in Brighton? How are they? How do they feel about the both pastors being involved in this triathlon?
We have been somewhat slow in unveiling it on purpose because we don't want to exhaust people with hearing about it.
Sure,
they'll get tired about it. But it just recently started to be something that's been mentioned more, and I had brought it up in a message, and then. Our children's ministry director brought it up in a children's message recently. So people here were going to do this race. And I think in their mind, especially the older people here, the pastors are going to do this race. They have no concept of what we have meant when we use the word race. And as they're finding out, they're like, what in the world? How are you going to do that? But they're very, and then they're very proud and excited, the people that I've talked to. And, I think that we'll find that as we start asking them to support it financially, we'll have some very gracious people amongst our pews because they know how much we've benefited from the assistance of others. And we have a school as well, so we have a lot of teachers who have benefited and are doing a great job. And so our people have a front row seat to what quality church workers look like. And they also understand how difficult it is on some of the workers because of their student loan debt. And our area has a particularly high cost of living. And so they get the facts of life. And I think they'll be eager to help support us.
What kind of a example do you think this sets for not only for your congregation and children, but for future church workers as well? What do you think, Mark?
Well, I actually really hope that, some of our old friends take notice. One of the things that I have a benefit of is that my wife's old college roommate and close friend that we're still in regular contact with is the alumni director at Concordia Chicago, where we went. And so she has kept us in tune to the need for alumni to give back. And I remember kind of the attitude of a lot of us when we were in college was, well, we can't give back. We're not going to make enough. And there's a certain element of, we're probably not going to have a multi-billion dollar endowment like some schools do, but I think everybody has the resources to give back something for sure. And as we at least my generation gets into their 40s, we may even have more opportunities. No doubt we have a lot of responsibilities too. But I guess I would say most of us benefited, or a lot of us benefited, and I don't want us to forget that. And I really would encourage a lot of friends to give back as the Lord has blessed them. I think it's really important.
Well, how can folks find out more about this event and how you're training for it, the other pastors that are involved? You guys have a website, right?
We do. It's try1406, that's T-R-I, and then 1406 to obviously simulate the 140.6miles.com. And we also have a Facebook page by the same name, try1406.
TRI1406.com. You can follow these pastors who are preparing. Now, here's the ultimate question. Do you have tri suits with clericals on them?
No, but we did just buy some wetsuits on sale, and they are not flattering. And, so we got some work to do.
There's nothing flattering about tri suits, that's for sure,
yeah, right.
Or wetsuits.
Yeah.
Now, is this the swim? Let's see, this is in Louisville, correct? Is this open water swim then? Since it's 2.4 miles.
Yeah, it's on the river there in Louisville, and kind of a funny story. The last Ironman there back in October, they actually, what was it, Mark? It was poisonous algae or something, or toxic algae? They were worried about the levels of toxic algae, so that's a new mix to the whole experience. Is are we going to survive the toxic algae in the river there in Louisville? I don't even know what river it is.
It's the Ohio River. Yeah.
Ohio River.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wow. So it's open water in a river. That's going to be intense, I'm sure. So right now you guys are training in pools. Will you have a chance to train in any rivers to prepare for that open water swim?
Yeah, we actually. Oh, go ahead, Drew.
Oh, I was going to. Yeah, we have plans. Obviously, in summertime, probably not in a river, but we got lakes here. And in fact, in southeast Detroit area, there's a lot of tri events, and we're actually doing one. We're going to do Olympic distance in Memorial Weekend. And so there's a lot of opportunities to do open water swimming, and that's important for your training. It's because it's a big difference between swimming in a pool and then going in open water. There's a whole different variables. But with the whole river, a lot of people think, well, you have to go upstream, downstream. Bulk of the swimming is actually going downstream, which actually it's not much of a current, but it'll give you a little extra push. So I'm counting on that. Let's put it that way.
Mark, what do you think about this open water swim?
Oh, boy. Yeah. I'll be looking forward to being done with it. One of the challenges of this triathlon in particular is that already it's shorter than most triathlons as far as time that you have. Most triathlons are 17 hours. They start at 7 a.m. and the cutoff time is midnight. This
wow.
one, they moved it to October. It used to be in August, but it was too hot. So they moved it to October. Well, it's not light enough. So it starts at 7:30, which means you have only 16 and a half hours. Well, then because it's a river swim and not an ocean swim, actually people go in a single file line. So if you're in the back of the line, it could hypothetically take over a half an hour until you get in the water, which then further decreases your time. Now, that might not affect my partners much, but I plan on needing the bulk of the day to finish. So I think there's a little anxiety about all of that. But, we have 7 months to work on it, so we'll just keep plugging ahead.
May you be blessed in doing so. The website to follow these guys, TRI1406, try1406.com. The Reverend Mark Milutz, Senior Pastor at Shepherd of the Lakes in Brighton, Michigan. Thanks for being my guest today.
Thanks for having me.
And the Reverend
Thank
Drew Gruenhagen, pastor at St. Michael in Wayne, Michigan. Thanks for being my guest today.
Thank you.
Coming up in just a little bit, we'll revisit a conversation with Dr. Den Trumbull, former president of the American College of Pediatricians. You're listening to Faith and Family on Worldwide KFUO.
Concordia University, Mequon, Wisconsin, overlooks the beautiful shoreline of Lake Michigan. This serene main campus of CUW is just 15 miles north of Milwaukee with all its vibrant cultural attractions. At Concordia University, Wisconsin, students living by the motto of inspiration in action can choose from 69 undergraduate majors, 14 master degree programs, and doctorates in pharmacy, physical therapy, and nursing practice. For more information or to take a virtual tour, visit cuw.edu.
This is Life Issues with Brad Mattis, president of Life Issues Institute.
You've heard touching stories of reunions between birth mothers and their children who were adopted, but this one will stand out in your mind. Betty Morrell was adopted into a wonderful family, but her parents died when she was in her 20s. A slip of the tongue while speaking with an aunt changed Betty's world. She found out what her birth name was and where she was born, but still, her search came up empty. Fast forward to the present when Betty's 82 years old. With the assistance of an online company, she finally found her mother's name. Lena Pierce is 96 and still living. What a remarkable and joyous reunion. Lena was only 14 when Betty was born and the state took her away. As for Betty, she said, "My life is complete."
For more information, visit our website at lifeissues.org and stay informed. More informed than you've ever been.
Colossians 3:23 says, "Whatever you do, work heartily as for the Lord and not for men." Kelly Schumacher, artist and founder of Agnus Dei Liturgical Arts, offers group and private lessons in classical art education that focus on Old Masters oil painting techniques and drawing that glorify God and are based on the fundamental principles of art and art history. Youth and adult lessons are available. AgnusDeiArts.com. That's AgnusDeiArts.com.
Worldwide KFUO, your most trusted radio station for Christian talk and sacred music. Listen on the air, online, and on demand 24 hours a day at KFUO.org. Listen anywhere you are with your Wi-Fi radios, smartphones, computers, and even on your smart TVs. KFUO embracing today's technologies to bring the good news message of Christ to the world. Listener-supported worldwide KFUO, the messenger of good news.
You've probably heard it said, you can't go home again. And that is half true. The other half of the truth, however, is told by the prodigal son, who discovered that because of love and forgiveness, he could go home again. Hear music from the prodigal son's point of view on the next Sing for Joy.
Sunday afternoons at 4 on Worldwide KFUO.
Are you willing to share your talents while learning new skills and enjoying fellowship? The Lutheran Church Missouri Synod is looking for volunteers who can help us share the love of Christ by offering their time and talents at the International Center. For more information, contact Maureen at Volunteer Connection 314-996-1629. 314-996-1629.
Join Worldwide KFUO and Peace Lutheran Church in South St. Louis County for live Lenten worship on Wednesdays throughout the season of Lent. The broadcasts begin at 11 a.m. with Pastors Dennis Castens and Joe Ferguson presiding over midweek Lenten worship leading up to Easter Sunday. Peace Lutheran Church, located at 737 Barracks View Road in South County, invites you to join these Lenten worship services in person or on Worldwide KFUO at KFUO.org, the messenger of good news.
Today's presentation is an encore presentation. Any dates or events mentioned in the program have already occurred. Welcome to Faith and Family. I'm your host, Andy Bates. Thanks so much for joining us today. We have a great conversation lined up. Joining us today by phone, Dr. Den Trumbull, president of the American College of Pediatricians. Good morning, Dr. Trumbull. How are you this morning?
Doing just fine, Andy. Glad to be here.
Thanks so much for being our guest today. Tell us about the American College of Pediatricians.
Well, the American College of Pediatricians is about a decade old, younger than a larger organization, the American Academy of Pediatrics. And we broke away from the larger group about 11 years ago, primarily because we saw that many of their policies were going in the direction of non-science-based, politically correct persuasions. And we felt like children and families in general were suffering as a result. So we have pledge to be scientific in our approach to policy and any policy statements that we make, and have tried to present the evidence that the family is important to the child.
And that's what we're about here at Faith and Family, too. So it's a good day for a conversation with the American College of Pediatricians. Well, recently there was an article in the Washington Post, and we hear about the abuse of women and children. It happens in this country every day. And most often men are the culprits there in the cases that are reported. What is the public conversation about abuse of women and children? What is that public conversation that's happening, and what's being left out in that conversation?
Well, the conversation seems to be focusing more on the individual child or on the individual woman involved, and attempts, I think, legislatively and socially are being made to empower them to protect themselves. But the article that you're referring to was insightful because it looks beyond what might be the obvious to the less obvious, and that is that marriage can be a tremendous protector, or you might say a vaccine against some of the abuses that women and young girls experience. Now, it's not 100% vaccinating against that possibility, but it greatly reduces the possibility of harm, both physically and even emotionally, to young girls within the home and older women who are married to the father of the child within the home.
So in the cases, the reported cases of abuse of women and or children where a man is involved, that usually, well, I shouldn't say usually, but the majority of those cases, the perpetrator is the man who is not necessarily married to the mother of the children, or there's not a married couple. It's not the married and biological parents of the children involved in the situation.
Exactly, Andy. There are two ways to look, two problem outcomes. One is sexual abuse and the other is physical abuse. In terms of sexual abuse, children are more likely to be abused when they do not live in a home with their married father. The statistic that was cited in the article is within a home where two married biological parents are present, the incidence of sexual abuse is 0.7 per 1,000 children. Well, compare that to a situation where a child is in the home with a single parent, in particular a mother, who is living with an unmarried cohabitating man, and the incidence goes up to 12.1 cases per 1,000. So over a 12-fold increase when the child is outside the protection of their married father within the home.
So what does this tell us about married men then? What do we know about married men and their relationship to children, to their mother?
Well, studies have long shown, you don't hear much about this these days, but years ago, there was a really good book written on this subject, that men settle. They settle down. They become more domestic. They become just basically gentler with marriage in general. When a man is married and assumes the responsibility, if he does, now it's not that there's no guarantee that every married man will assume the responsibility, but when a married man has a responsibility of protecting and providing for his wife and his children, he tends to view life a little more seriously and more responsibly. Unmarried men are less long-term thinking and more short-term thinking. A married father in the home with his biological daughter is viewing her and their relationship as long-term, where researchers feel that when the mother is living in the home with an in an unmarried relationship with another man, that man is not viewing the relationship with near the quality and care and long-term outlook that he should or would otherwise be viewing, and therefore the children are viewed as less valuable to him. And there might be a little more selfish approach in that situation than you would find with a married father.
That makes sense to me, that if the man and woman are married, there's a commitment, a long-term commitment, more likely to be a long-term commitment there. And everyone, both the wife and children, are to be valued and to be viewed as more a long-term commitment, long-term investment, if you will, rather than in an unmarried situation where there is no there's no formal commitment. In our society, in our culture today, well, we live in a society that says you don't need to be married to have a relationship, to be intimate, or even to be quote unquote committed or to have children. Marriage is quite often viewed as an old fashioned idea. It's not for everybody. It's just a piece of paper, some might say. Is there fault to be found in this worldview, in this paradigm?
Absolutely, there is. And as a pediatrician and as the president of the American College of Pediatricians, we feel like society has moved in the direction of adult preferences without giving attention to the consequences that those preferences will have upon the child. So we have moved away from commitment and more toward, you know, if it feels good, do it, and more toward individual pleasure for the adult. And we have literally neglected the child, because when an adult is responsible to a child, I think today it's viewed as hampering a bit. It's encumbering. And the message that the media, both in Hollywood and even our news media, portrays is that the adult should have the freedom to do whatever they want to do, whenever they want to do it. And we've moved away from responsibility in general.
So we've really become an individualistic society that focuses on individual wants, felt needs, over that of the family, that of the community, that of society, or other groups that we might be connected with. The needs and felt needs and wants of the individual take priority over that of those around us quite often.
Exactly. You know, one very succinct way of putting it is that we become a hedonistic society, which generally precedes the downfall of most civilizations historically. When we begin to focus on individual pleasure versus the good of the body or the good of society, the good of the whole, society begins to crumble. And sadly, we're kind of quickly moving in that direction. So we at the American College of Pediatricians are trying to present the science behind the disadvantages of cohabitating. For instance, we have just completed a two-part series on what the science has to say about how cohabitating is unhealthy for the woman, the man involved, and the children involved. We would like to see more sexual responsibility be taught, and that is where parents talk to their children about sexuality, and they discuss the harms of promiscuous sexuality and the benefits of saving themselves for marriage and for that one spouse, because there are tremendous health benefits. But we don't hear this in the media, and we certainly don't see it at the movie theater. What we see is the benefits of individual pleasure and short-term view of life, basically. And then we also have a paper on our website entitled "The Impact of Family Structure on the Health of Children," and we talk about the impact of divorce, not only upon the child but upon the husband and the wife involved. There's just nothing good about that. Now, we also realize there are certainly households where the relationship has deteriorated and has become quite dysfunctional and at times even harmful. And we would certainly encourage intervention there. But it's more the quick, frivolous divorces that are so common today and the lack of commitment that comes with marriage today that we're speaking out on.
I appreciate that you said, you know, not all marriages are perfect. And some situations, some marriages, some households, the relationship has deteriorated so seriously that there's need for intervention. Quite often the response in our culture and society today is when a relationship has deteriorated, then the only answer is divorce. But you use the word intervention. What would an intervention perhaps include? What could be an intervention for a marriage in need?
Well, I'm not a lawyer, but certainly our society has moved toward no-fault divorce and very quick divorce. We would like to see legislation that would require a waiting period, would require counseling, and the counselor would not necessarily be advocating, you know, get away from him or get away from her. She's not been faithful to you, but rather let's work on why either of you or both of you are the way you are, and let's work on reestablishing the marriage. So counseling is what we would like to see, or another term would be coaching. None of us are good at everything we do, mm-hmm. and therefore coaching, both in marriage and in parenting, is always useful. Men seem to be the most resistant to counseling, unfortunately, and I'll have mothers say, I've tried to get him to go to counseling, he won't, so we're getting a divorce. If a man could just see it as coaching, a way to improve upon the relationship, that's what we mean by slowing things down and trying to not advocate frivolous divorce.
So what I hear you saying about marriage is that, one, it's not just about you, the individual, but it's actually about the whole family. It's about the whole body. It's about your community. It's about your culture, not just you. It impacts more than just you as an individual. Your marriage, the health of your marriage, and also marriage impacts and affects your health, your family's health, your children's health, your spouse's health. It's more than just a piece of paper.
Exactly. And, you know, in a society where we put individual pleasure or individual wants above the wants or needs of children, I still would say to that adult, your health will be enhanced if you work out the difficulty within the marriage and stay married. Your health will be enhanced. The myth today is that we just cut and run and you're going to be happier. And certainly there are really dysfunctional situations that would be true. But we must not let the exceptional situation define the unexceptional. So when the majority of divorces represent marriages that could be saved, we mustn't let the extremely dysfunctional marriages cause us to go to the extreme and say, yes, we need to make it easy for everyone to get out of marriage. So yes, for the individual, for the children, for the community, for our nation, there are benefits for everyone that are not being promoted and not seen because of this pervading individualism that has been so pervasive in our society.
And going back to our starting point, the marriage is good for the safety of women and children, is especially for girls. When, as you pointed out earlier, when men are married, there's a commitment there. They see the relationship with both the mother and the children as long term.
Exactly. You know, one U.S. Department of Justice study showed that never married women are nearly four times more likely to be victims of violent crime compared with married women. So the bottom line of the study was married women are less likely to be raped, assaulted, or even robbed than their unmarried peers. There are benefits all the way around for adults and for children.
So marriage is a good thing. It's not just about us. It's good for our health. It's good for safety. The more we can do to support marriage certainly is to support faithful marriage is a good thing.
It really is. And, you know, as I've just thought about this interview and as we've discussed this on our executive committee of the college, you know, where can we start as a society to renew the value of biological, heterosexual, nuclear marriage and family? And I think it can start with educating our parents that their teenagers do need them. Parents need to be reengaged in the lives of their teens. They do need to be monitoring the activities and the dating partners of their teens, and they need to talk about the benefits of marriage and that marriage is a long-term commitment. And then next, I'd say that parents need to encourage their teens to be sexually responsible, like I said earlier, the harms of promiscuous sexuality, and to discourage cohabitation. And then finally, our media needs to support the nuclear family rather than promoting this hedonistic individualism, you know, causing Hollywood to turn around. It is going to be a little more difficult, obviously, but we need to be honest about the ravages of divorce. And then legislation. I believe our legislators can take a closer look at what currently exists and legislate for the nuclear family, make it advantageous for families and couples to stay together and to work to resolve the conflict rather than advantageous just to cut and run. Certainly both parties suffer economically in the path of divorce.
Any resources that you would like to point us to? I certainly will provide a link to the American College of Pediatricians website, acpeds.org. We'll provide a link to that today with the archive of our program. But any resources particularly that you would like to point us to?
Well, on our website, another way to get to our website is bestforchildren.org. We have a parent section and a resource section. We also have a marriage section that parents or even inquiring teens could go to, and we have resources listed there that represent links to other websites of like-minded organizations. That would be my best advice.
Anything coming up with the American College of Pediatricians you'd like to share with us?
Well, not necessarily. We're about to have our national meeting, which we're excited about, in Hilton Head. And we, this fall, plan to work harder on promoting the family with some press releases and some papers that are in the works right now. And, you know, I would encourage listeners to ask their pediatricians if they've heard of the American College of Pediatricians. And if their pediatrician is a little more conservatively minded, give us a look, because we are, you know, very different from the larger organization, and can offer some resources that may help any pediatrician in practice support the family and the children they care for.
Well, we've been talking with Dr. Den Trumbull, president of the American College of Pediatricians. Dr. Trumbull, thank you so much for being our guest today on Faith and Family.
Thank you for the invitation.
Listen to Faith and Family Monday through Friday at this time. Faith and Family is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is needed for Faith and Family to continue. Our address is 1333 South Kirkwood Road, St. Louis, Missouri, 63122. You can contact us on the web and download Faith and Family at kfuo.org. Worldwide KFUO, on the air, online,
and on demand.